This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's Matt Jones.
Arkansas still in the lead in the SEC West with 4 weeks left in the regular season, but the race has tightened after the Hogs lost a couple of one-run games at Texas A&M last week. Up next for Arkansas, a weekend series with Ole Miss this week at Baumwalker Stadium. Matt Jones with Bubba Carpenter. Bubba, what do you make of the Texas A&M series? You know, there are a lot of ways that we can unpack this series. Close games, some hitting problems, pitching problems in game three. Just kind of, if you were to analyze the whole weekend, what were your takeaways?
Well, I thought we had a lot of missed opportunities, Matt, to be honest with you. You know, first of all, on Friday night, I was really proud of Connor Nolan, the way he, you know, I call it bowing your neck. He kind of bowed his neck. He had a couple of tough situations, you know, walked a couple of guys, but he gutted his way through it. And goes back to his mental toughness. He's able to gut through it and find a way to get through, you know, six good innings. And so, you know, I thought he did enough to get us a win. We just had some situations where we couldn't get that runner in key situations. And then on Saturday, you know, it kind of, Hagan got off to a bad start. I don't know. It's a tough environment there at A&M. You know, I don't know if you've been there or not. It feels like the fans are right on top of you. I don't know if that affected Hagan or not. He just didn't seem comfortable on the mound. You know, got us through three innings, and then the bullpen came up, and they were good for us. The bullpen kept us in that. We ended up gutting out a win right there, 3-1. We didn't hit a whole lot, but we hit enough to win. And then, you know, Sunday was just a frustrating game, you know, all the way around, to be honest with you. It was, you know, I felt for Jackson. You know, he struggles to get through that first inning a lot. You know, but look at the team, the way they battled back. I think that says a whole lot about the way they battled back. At one point, they're down 9-1. You know, came back 11-10. We really had a chance to win. Runners at second and third, nobody out, and we have three consecutive strikeouts. And, you know, we can talk about it in a little bit if you want. A few of those calls were very questionable. One was outright horrible, in my opinion. A couple of them were, actually. But, you know, overall, I still feel like, you know, we didn't play very good, and we still should have won 2 out of 3. So, you know, it could have been a whole lot worse, in my opinion, Matt.
One thing I thought about was that, you know, they were playing in heat indexes in the 90s, and it's kind of like that first time when you go out and mow your yard in the summer, Bub, and you're like, man, was it really this hard last August? And, you know, I think that there was probably a little bit of acclimation to that too. And I have to think that, you know, even though baseball is supposed to be played in warm weather, there probably was a little bit of acclimation that A&M had been playing in some warmer weather. And that was the hottest games that Arkansas had played in this year. And, you know, as a hitter, that can kind of take your legs away toward the end of games.
Well, I think from a hitting standpoint, though, Matt, I love it as a hitter. I want to be sweating when I'm hitting. I really do. Now, from a pitching standpoint, you get that sweat running down your hand. The ball feels a little bit different in a sweaty hand. Maybe you can't get a grip on it. It's harder to get a feel. I think it affects the pitchers that first time more so than the hitters, because hitters, we love it, man. The hotter, the better. I want it hot when I'm stepping up to the plate. But, you know, I don't know if that had a bearing on the pitching, because you know you can put all the rosin you want around your wrist. Like I have my guys dab rosin all around their wrist. It keeps the sweat from running down onto their hand. But it can affect things, you know, from a pitching standpoint. So maybe that was part of it. I don't know, but I'm one of those that say, even though, you know, it was our first time to play in a lot of heat and humidity, both teams have to play in it. So you need to ultimately find a way to get it done.
A lot better to play in that weather than to play in the type of weather that they played in previous to that. Let's talk about those called strike threes that you referenced in game three. And most people probably listen to this, watch the game, but if for some reason you didn't, Scott Kennedy, the home plate umpire, one of the really veteran umpires in the SEC, in a very critical moment, I thought missed a couple of strike three calls that benefited A&M. Or I'm sorry, he called strike three, a couple of calls that I thought benefited A&M. Arkansas has scored 5 runs in the eighth. They've got runners at second and third. And who was it first? Was it Braden Webb took one at the knees, maybe mm-hmm. just below the knees, and that was called strike three. That was the first out of the inning. And then the one that really, I think, bothered a lot of people was the outside fastball strike three call against Brady Slavens on a 1-2 or a 2-2 pitch. And, you know, that took away the sacrifice fly opportunity. Now, Dave Van Horn was asked about it afterward. He said, it doesn't matter the strike zone. You've still got to figure out a way to put the ball in play. And we're going to talk a little bit later, Bubba, about situational hitting. But those two strike calls, sometimes I think that games can get so long that umpire strike zones kind of expand. Otherwise, they're afraid they're going to be out there for 5 hours or so. And that game on Sunday was starting to get a little bit long. And I wonder if that strike zone expanded for Kennedy there in the late innings.
Unfortunately, I think it did, Matt. I really do. And let's go back to the first of the game. The way the game started out, I don't know if you remember or not, Jackson walked the first hitter on a 3-2 pitch, couple of close pitches. Rock comes up, Dylan Rock. He's a real good hitter, two-hole guy. He had a 3-2 count. The 3-2 pitch, I think, is a strike. The runner stealing, Turner threw to second, and he would have been out. So it would have been a strike him out, throw him out. And there would have been no one on with two outs. And then Jackson gets out of that inning if that happens. As a result, it calls a ball. So now there's two runners on, nobody out. And then, you know, it kind of went downhill from there. But so early in the game, it seemed like the zone was tight. And then, as you said, as the game got on, it opened up. I thought the 2-2 breaking ball to Braden Webb with nobody out, runners to second and third and eighth, that's a curveball down. It's not a strike, but it's a close pitch, but it's a ball. It's definitely a ball. But then you go to Brady Slavens, the first pitch to Brady, the 0-0 fastball away was off the plate. Dave even called timeout to talk to Brady. And you and I have watched Brady, everyone that watches Brady hit, you know, he shows his emotions a lot. And I think Dave wanted to settle him down because a lot of times he'll take that first pitch strike and he gets mad about it. That second strike, he's swinging. He's in swing mode after that because he's like, he doesn't want to take another pitch and get the two strikes. But I really thought the first pitch was bad. But the third strike, it was a 1-2 fastball away, and it's off the plate. The lefty's throwing across his body a little bit, which helps. That ball clipped the front corner of that plate, the front edge, but it didn't. That ball was over in the right-handed batter's box. And it's just unfortunate. That's a really bad time right there. It just takes the bat out of the hitter's hand. And I've seen a lot of it this year, but that was a really bad call. And then, so what ends up happening, Caden Wallace comes up. Caden gets four fastballs. I don't know, maybe one or two of them were strikes, but they were all outside. So as a result, I think Caden expanded his strike zone and fouled off four consecutive fastballs, then chased a slider in the dirt for strike three to end the inning. I don't like it. I get asked all the time about the automatic strike zone. Should we go to that? I don't want it. I don't. I like having an umpire back there. They take, you know, because for me, I love watching a good catcher, you know, the way he can present that pitch to the umpire and get a call. But some of those pitches are so bad that it's just, there's no place for that. In the SEC, those guys are supposed to be better than that.
You know, the devil's advocate would say that you've got to protect the plate in those situations, but it's hard to protect the plate when the pitch is so far off the plate like it was for Brady Slavens.
You're right, Matt, but I'll tell you what. Okay, so I teach what's called up, up, and up. Scoot up, choke up. So what I want to do is take that outside pitch away. In youth baseball, in high school baseball, that outside part of the plate gets really wide. The only way to defend against that is to scoot up on the plate, make the ball 4 inches off the plate seem like it's on the corner. But you know what? In the SEC, you shouldn't have to do that. 4 or 5 inches off the plate should not be called a strike. So now if he's consistently calling it, yeah, you got to get your toes up on the line and do the best you can. No one can hit that pitch, but you can foul it off and try to find a way to get it done. Find a way is one of my favorite things. I say it all the time. Come on, find a way right here to get it done. But in Brady Slavin's defense, I don't think he would have needed a boat paddle to hit that pitch. It's just too far outside, and we're trained our whole life what's a strike, what's not a strike, and it's really hard to expand the zone that far when you've got a tough lefty on the mound like that.
Credit should go to Jacob Palish. He pitched really well for A&M during a lot of, you know, tight situations. 4 innings on Friday night, 2 innings on Sunday. He gave up the double to Dylan Leach right after he came into the game. But after that, you know, he retired Arkansas's 1-6 hitters in order. You know, I think sometimes he was able to take advantage of a wide strike zone, but I think to his credit too, Bubba, he did a really good job of not putting balls over the plate that were, you know, easily hittable. And sometimes it's hard when you come back on, you know, 2 days rest like he did to pitch like that again. And I thought he was just as good on Sunday as he was on Friday night.
Yeah, I think so. He threw 56 pitches on Friday night and 4 innings, 2 hits, and he really 7 strikeouts. He looked awesome on Friday night. And you're right, he pitched to the strike zone. Even Friday night, the zone, you know, I thought it was a little generous on that outside part of the plate. I don't know if maybe the umpire has a hard time because of the way he kind of throws a little bit across his body, if that was affecting the way he was seeing that outside pitch. I don't know, but he was getting several pitches away to lefties. And, you know, but he did a great job. I agree. I mean, you take Palish out of the equation, we might have swept them. You know, he just came in and did a great job. And so, but it is what it is. You know, ultimately, Dave's right. You've got to find a way to get it done. But it doesn't stop me from complaining about it, because I think it's really frustrating. The plate is 17 inches for a reason. Call it 17 inches. If you want to call up and down the top of the zone or the bottom of the zone, I got no problem with that. I can handle that all day. I can figure out a way to get that done. But when you're calling 6 inches off the plate with a lefty throwing 3/4, 92, 93 miles an hour, you're asking a lot of a hitter, and it's frustrating.
One thing to keep in mind about Palish, he was all Pac-12 a year ago. He pitched at the College World Series, pitched 4 1/3 innings, gave up 1 run. This is a really good pitcher who A&M was fortunate to go pick up in the transfer portal in the offseason. One of the big concerns, I think probably the biggest concern other than situational hitting for Arkansas coming out of A&M, was the pitching of Jackson Wiggins. Just looked really off. And, you know, we've kind of seen this progression from him, Bubba. He had the great start against Missouri. I think went 7 2/3 innings in Columbia. But since then, it seems like, you know, he's had to labor a lot more through innings. I wonder what you thought about what you saw from him on Sunday, and where you think they are with him as a starter. And do you think there's any chance that they might leave Game 3 open? Maybe they look at Wiggins going back to the bullpen.
I don't think so. I don't think it's time for that yet. Look, he's still – I think the league's hitting 228 against them. He's still – He just needs to throw more strikes, to be honest with you, Matt. He has a hard time with that first inning. I asked Matt Hobbs, you know, I said, hey, do you think the crowd, the atmosphere got to him? To me on the mound, he didn't look comfortable. He was working slow. He just didn't look like himself on the mound, just his body language, his demeanor and everything. And Matt said, no, he said, he's not a guy that really gets fazed by that. He just struggles with that first inning. If we can get him through the first inning, that's why I go back to that strikeout throw out would have been huge, because he gets out of that first inning, you know, most likely he gets out of that first inning if we get that call, and we're not having this conversation right now. But, you know, he's got to figure out a way to get it done. I did talk to Hobbs, and he said that they're going to tweak his midweek bullpen this week and do a few things different to try to help him, you know, establish himself in that first inning. And so we'll see what — I'm not going to go into all the details, but just we'll see what happens there. Hopefully it'll work. I know he made some adjustments with Hagen Smith. You know, his pregame routine was a little bit different, you know, got him lathered bit more, and he came out against LSU and pitched awesome in that, you know, the first inning on. And so, you know, maybe a few tweaks here and there, we'll get Jackson out there and he'll be ready to roll. But I don't think it's time to make a move right now. I still got confidence in him. I know he's got elite stuff. He's just got to start commanding it a little bit better, and I'd like to see him still mixing a few changeups. He's kind of gotten away from that changeup. He needs a pitch to get the lefties off the fastball, in my opinion. Now, those guys have the analytics down there. They know what they're doing. Just in my opinion, as a left-handed hitter, if he's throwing fastball slider only or fastball curveball, I feel comfortable against the guy. I don't care if it's coming 98. That doesn't matter. Now, when you go 98 with a slider, you can throw in a 98-mile-an-hour fastball at the top of the zone and then a changeup. You can go arm side away to me as a left-handed hitter. That changes my approach against a guy like that. And so I just wish he'd mix in a few more changeups. Maybe he's kind of lost the feel for it. I don't know. But hopefully he'll get the feel for that pitch back.
Wiggins allowed 6 of 7 base runners to reach before he was pulled after one out in the first inning. Gave up a double, 2-run double that gave A&M a 2-0 lead. And then Austin Bost, who's hitting like 500 in his last 30 at-bats, He had a 3-run home run against him. And I think Wiggins is one of the reasons, Bubba, why I was asking about the weather earlier, because when you're watching him, I don't know if it was the heat or maybe it was the embarrassment of what was going on, but his face was just real red. And I don't know, he just looked different than he usually does.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what I mean. He did not look comfortable on the mound. And usually Jackson is like a calm, cool customer. And that's why I asked Matt Hobbs if maybe the crowd got to him, and he's like, no. But, you know, Jackson didn't get flustered. I mean, he's pretty even keel. So I would have been really surprised if the crowd was getting to him. But there's something about the A&M crowd that just gets under your skin. They rag you in a way that just it's annoying. And they did it way back in the day. And I used to get mad. I don't think it bothered me. I think it made me mad, and it made me really bear down a little bit more, but it affects everyone differently. But it could have been the heat. Maybe he was just, he just didn't have a feel for the ball. It's kind of hard to say, you know, Matt, but I expect him to come back this week. And I think he's going to bounce back against Ole Miss and be really good. Getting back home at Baum Walker, these guys pitch great off of that Baum Walker mound. So I think just being back home with Ole Miss coming to town, I feel really good about it.
I thought the bullpen was really good in College Station. A lot of people are going to look at what they did on Sunday and say you're crazy, but you know, you look at the bullpen, they pitched 8 2/3 innings during the Sunday game, and they gave up 3 earned runs. That's not bad, especially when you're talking about some more end of the line pitchers. You know, the defense kind of let them down in a couple of instances where A&M scored unearned runs. And it was just kind of an uncharacteristic day for Arkansas that you had 3 errors defensively. You had, you know, some relievers that maybe weren't pitching quite like they usually do. But for the weekend at A&M, Bubba, I mean, Evan Taylor pitched 2 innings of scoreless relief. On Friday night, you go back to Saturday, I thought Zach Morris looked really good. Evan Taylor looked good again in that game. Brady Tigert pitched well that day. He also pitched well on Sunday. And then really the pitcher who I think has really caught my eye over the last maybe 10 days or so the most is Heston Toll. This was a guy that we thought was going to be a much bigger part of the pitching staff early in the season. Had some arm soreness, and now it seems like he's starting to work that out. Pitched a couple of good innings down at College Station. Did give up a home run, but otherwise he was pretty good there. And then in the game Tuesday night, North Little Rock, he comes in a real high-stakes situation in the 10th inning, and he strands Trey Harris at third base with one out in the inning. I think Keston Toll, similar to how he did last year when he came on and maybe had more of an expanded role in late April and into May, maybe we're going to see that for him again this year.
I hope you're right, Matt. And he did. He came up big for us. And, him and Zach Morris, those two guys stepping up in the bullpen are going to be huge for us. But Heston might be that last piece to the puzzle that we're looking for down there that we can count on to come in key situations. You know, he's got good stuff. It's like a lot of those guys, though. It's just a matter of commanding it, taking all that stuff out on the mound, applying it and getting outs with it. And I think he's really close to getting where we want him to be.
What have you seen from him over the last couple of weeks that maybe is different than what you saw early in the year?
Okay, so here's the thing about Heston I really like. He's in 13 innings, he's given up 19 hits, which you don't want that. But lately he's gotten better, but he's got 18 strikeouts. He's only walked 2. So he's throwing the ball over the plate, and that's a big thing. Just being able to go out there, because it's not the hits that are going to get you. It's the 2 walks and then the base hit. And Dave talks about it all the time, how hard it is to string together multiple hits in an SEC game. Well, it's a walk, an error, and then the double or the home run that gets you in trouble. And Heston can minimize that just because he throws strikes and he can throw his pitch. He throws a lot of what I call pitcher's pitches. Now he doesn't have a dominant stuff, say Brady Tigert, that kind of breaking ball, but he's got good stuff and he can throw it all around the zone, multiple pitches, and that makes him effective.
Let's talk about the offense for a minute. Not a great offensive series for either team the first 2 games, and then they really both broke out in game 3. A&M out hit Arkansas 15-14, outscored them 11-10 in the finale. I thought one of the bright spots for Arkansas during the weekend, though, was the play of Peyton Stovall. He did have a game where he didn't have a hit at College Station, but then he also had a 2-for-3 performance, and he had a 3-for-4 performance in the finale. It seems like he's starting to become a lot more comfortable since they moved him down toward the bottom of the order, and that's, I guess, what you kind of expect from a freshman this late in the year.
Well, I think so. I think he's starting to swing it. Now, I will tell you, defensively, he didn't have a very good game on Sunday. I think he missed a couple of balls that normally he catches. He's done a phenomenal job at first base. Mm-hmm. But offensively, yeah, he swung the bat really well all weekend, had some really good at bats. And so that's a bat that we really need to get going in that lineup. Because when he's going well, he off fields. And so I like where we're going with Peyton Stovall there. You know, we were talking about the three errors, Matt, on Sunday. It wasn't really just the three errors. There were multiple plays that we didn't make, like maybe a routine double play ball that we bobbled just a little bit and we don't get the double play and the run ends up scoring. There were the three errors, but then there were just plays that we normally make that we didn't make. I think that really hurt us on Sunday. And instead of being 11-10 game, they shouldn't have scored 11 runs. Let's just put it that way.
You know, some of those errors, Bubba, were on Caden Wallace, and he's such an interesting third baseman to me because he makes so many great plays at third base, but you look at his fielding fielding percentage, it's .915 right now. That's the worst on the team. I feel like he's a better third baseman than the fielding percentage would show.
I think so, but I think a lot of those are almost hustle errors, Matt. So he'll get to a ball that most guys don't get to, come up, rush his throw, and maybe throw it away. And gets an error for it. Well, a lot of guys don't get to that ball. It rolls down in a corner. It's a double. So I think that's where some of those errors have come from. He's real aggressive at third base. You see him a lot of times going way to his left to cut a ball off that probably, you know, Jalen's probably there and ready to field it. But, you know, you want Jason to be aggressive. Like, that's an easier play for him going across. So I think that's where some of those errors have come from. It's not like he's booting routine balls. It's typically most of his errors are hustle errors, what I call them. And I'm not worried about him at all. I love seeing him at third base, and I'll take the good with the bad.
I think some of his errors also came, two or three of them came during that trip to Round Rock when the ground was real cold and wasn't a great surface that they were playing on. And so maybe you kind of have to take that into consideration when you're looking at the fielding percentage for Caden Wallace. One of the big moments I thought in the weekend and something I think that this team can build on is Dylan Leach coming in as a pinch hitter. He didn't get the job done as a pinch hitter on Friday or Saturday, but then he comes in against Jacob Palace on Sunday. They turn him around, make him hit right-handed, and he goes the other way with a two-run double that at that point, when he hit the double, I thought they're going to win the game. And so it's interesting with Leach. Now you've got a right-handed bat who can come off the bench and has proven that he can get it done for you in an SEC game. I don't know that I thought they had that as a pinch hitter going into College Station.
Well, you're right, Matt. I said a few weeks ago, the one thing we're lacking on this team, we don't have that big right-handed off the bench. And you know, you look at Zach Gregory, and I'm going to preface this by saying I love Zach Gregory. I really do. He's scrappy. He's, when you think of Razorback baseball, that's what you think of, is a kid that, a guy that plays like that. But he is hitting .111 against lefties right now. So when you get those matchups late in the game against a tough SEC lefty, you need a bat you can bring off the bench. And the fact that Dylan Leach had that double, that was a tough bat against Palace, 2-strike hit down the right field line. I agree with you. When he hit that, I thought, we got this thing won. You know, if we could have just tied it, we had it, because they're out of pitching. I think Palace was their last option. They had some other guys down there getting loose, but I think that was it. They're going to live or die with him. But having Dylan there is going to be huge for us. And even if you had to use him in a situation where maybe you didn't want to use him a little bit earlier in a game, if something were to happen with Michael Turner, you still got Max Solis Jr. So you still have a guy on the bench that could come in and catch if something were to happen, you know, because you don't like to use your backup catcher as a pinch hitter, you know, or pinch hit in that DH role. You get kind of locked up in your lineup. So if you had to, you could always bring Max Solis in to catch if you had to. So I think that's going to be huge. And the big thing is he can hit left-handed or right-handed. So hopefully he'll stay hot because he's been swinging really well.
I think one of the big questions going into this series in Fayetteville against Ole Miss this weekend, Bubba, is going to be who hits leadoff. It's been kind of a revolving door lately. Peyton Stovall did it for a while, and then Caden Wallace did it for a long time. They took him out of that position, put Braden Webb in it, didn't go well. Put Robert Moore in the leadoff position against UCA on Tuesday night. He did get a hit and scored the winning run. The batting average wouldn't suggest that he's your typical leadoff hitter, although he does get on base quite a bit. What do you think they're going to do with their leadoff role against Ole Miss? And do you think Moore sticks in that position, or do you think maybe they go back to someone else?
Well, if you look at the lineup and you look at the on-base percentages, the strikeouts, the walks, stuff like that, you know, it's tough. We don't have a guy that you just look at and you're like, he's our leadoff guy. I like Robert Moore in a run, driving in runs. I think he's a perfect guy in the middle of that lineup. He finds a way to get runs in. But you look at his batting average, Matt, he's hitting 190. He's got the best strikeout to walk ratio. He's walked 13 times. This is just SEC. He's walked 13 times, got 12 strikeouts. He's the only guy with a favorable. Everyone else has struck out way more than they've walked. His own base percentage is 370 in the SEC. I guess it's the long-winded answer to your question. If I would, probably put Robert Moore there just because he's a veteran guy. He's a smart hitter. He can either jump the first pitch if he gets a pitch he likes, or he's really patient and can work the count. So I think I'd put Robert up there right now, and then he can still drive in runs when the bottom of your lineup's getting on base, just like they did for Caden Wallace when they first moved him to the leadoff spot. He'll find a way to get those runners in. But I think it's time to just try something different, see what happens this weekend. I think Robert would do a good job up there.
That Gregory still has an OPS of right around 1,000. Do you think they maybe think about putting him there?
They might. So against the righties. Now against lefties, I think you mix it up. I think, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing a combination of Zach Gregory leading off against righties, just because he sees a bunch of pitches, he finds a way to get on base. That's what you want out of your leadoff guy. Against a lefty, you can throw Robert up there, let Robert do the same thing. He's been really good from the right hand side of the plate. So, you know, maybe that's the answer to your question. I mean, who knows? And I still say that Dave's going to experiment a little bit. Someone's going to step up into that leadoff spot and do a good job at some point. And, you know, we're getting later in the season right now, so I think it's time. I think you're going to see it happen pretty soon, though.
A couple of quick thoughts on the midweek game in North Little Rock. Arkansas beat UCA 2-1 in 10 innings. Dave Van Horn was asked afterward if he was surprised that because Arkansas had scored 21 runs earlier in the season that they only scored two in this one. And he said, no, he said, a lot of times that's typically how it goes when you played a team earlier and you scored a lot of runs for whatever reason. The next game seems to be a lot more low scoring. The Razorbacks went on a walk-off wild pitch on a 3-2 count with two outs in the 10th inning. Can't get much more dramatic than that. Robert Moore came home from third base. A couple of thoughts on the midweek, Bubba. Number one, I think, you know, when I looked around the country last night, I saw that Miami lost to Stetson 12-4. LSU lost to New Orleans 9-4. Abilene Christian went to Lubbock and beat Texas Tech 8-5. And so, you know, I think an ugly win is a lot better than a high scoring loss in these midweek games. But the other thing is that it seems like just about every year, maybe every other year that Arkansas goes down to North Little Rock, for whatever reason, they are tight games. They are low scoring games. That is a seems like it's a pitcher friendly park at Dickey Stevens. And, you know, Arkansas's lineup, just it doesn't matter if it was the 2012 team or the 2022 team. They just haven't seemed to play real well in that ballpark offensively. And so I don't know that the game last night was really that surprising. And one other thought, you know, you look at UCA, they're on top of their division right now in their conference. And coming into that game, you know, we talked about A&M last week. You kind of look at what they've done in their last 10 games. Well, UCA in their 10 before they went to North Little Rock, they had won 7 of 10. And so even though this is a team that's playing a lot different competition, it was still a team that was playing pretty good baseball coming in.
I think so. In my opinion, Matt, that was kind of a perfect storm going into last night where it could have easily equaled a loss. I mean, I think we're fortunate to get out of there. UCA played a great game. The pitcher they had, Oliver Loftman, did a great job, you know, kind of just pitching the contact, you know, getting a lot of weak contact, ground balls. just missing barrels. I thought he did a great job. But you think about it, and if you're a player, so I try to put myself into their shoes, and I say, okay, we lost a tough game Sunday at A&M. We come back here, we get back late. We got Monday's a day off. Tuesday, we get up, we get on a bus, we bust to Little Rock. These guys don't want to do that. Nothing against Little Rock. The fans are awesome in Little Rock. Once they get there and they're all hyped up, the crowd, it's a sellout. They're excited to be there, but they just don't want to do it because they're already forward, and they're trying to get the taste of the A&M loss on Sunday out of their mouth. And then at the same time, they're trying to get ready for Ole Miss. So to go to Little Bus down there 3 hours, 3.5 hours, and then play a game, it's just tough to do. And it's tough to flip that switch on when you get there. Now, I think once they get there and they see the crowd and the enthusiasm, I think they get excited. But it's such a mental game. It's hard to flip that switch on. And I think that has a lot to do with it, Matt. That's just a tough ask of these guys in the middle of an SEC grind to drive down there and play a game in Little Rock. I almost wish we would flip it and play this game first, early in the season, and then have UCA come here later in the season, or whoever we end up playing in Little Rock, because I think Dickie Stephens Park, I think that's awesome. And we've got so many great fans in the Central Arkansas Little Rock area. I think the game itself is awesome. I think it's just tough on these guys this time of year to go down there and do it.
Dave Van Horn said that in the pregame show with Phil Elson. He kind of indicated that, I don't know if worried is the right word, but he was interested to see how the game was going to play out last night because of the travel. He said that typically he tries to put the game in North Little Rock after a series in Fayetteville, and for whatever reason, it turned out this time that they were coming down there after a road series, and it turned out that the Razorbacks didn't play all that well. The Whole Hog Baseball Podcast is sponsored by Massage Envy, voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Visit Mike and his staff in Tuscany Square at 2603 West Pleasant Grove Road in Rogers, or in Fayetteville at 3557 North Shiloh Drive. Massage Envy has services for everyone. MassageEnvy.com.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's best day spa and best massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
You know, it never goes out of style, a great burger. And for a long time now, the best burgers around have been made at CJ's Butcher Boy. I've been stopping at their Russellville location for years to enjoy a double with bacon, cheese, and all the fixings. Well, the fries are always made fresh, and their shakes are made with real premium ice cream. And now that CJ's Butcher Boy has a Fayetteville location too on Weddington, you can bet I'll be there a lot more. CJ's Butcher Boy in Russellville and Fayetteville. When all you do are burgers, they have to be the best.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Now let's look at this week in the SEC, presented by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers.
As we said earlier, the SEC West race tightened up quite a bit over the weekend. Arkansas had a three-game lead in the West going to College Station. They came home with just a one-game lead in the division. Arkansas 12-6 in SEC play. Auburn is 11-7. The Tigers swept South Carolina over the weekend. A couple of comeback wins, and Auburn really playing well now. And that's a team that Arkansas goes to next week. All of a sudden, that's become a big series on the horizon for the Razorbacks, Bubba.
I think so, but I tell you what's going to help us out, Matt, is Auburn has Tennessee this weekend. So I may have to pull for Tennessee this weekend. That's going to be a tough series for Auburn. But you're right, they're hanging around. But next weekend is going to be a big series for us. And I think it's still amazing. You look at these standings, and you see Mississippi State at 8-10, Ole Miss at 6-12. Who would have ever thought that the two Mississippi schools that low? Now I love seeing Ole Miss in the cellar. And I'm looking forward to this weekend. But yeah, Auburn's right in the mix. And I tell you, A&M's hot right now. So they're a team that I think you could – that we better watch out for later on, because they're gonna hang around, I think.
LSU also made up a game on Arkansas in the West Division. They swept Missouri over the weekend in Baton Rouge, a couple of close games there too. But LSU and A&M are two games back of the Razorbacks at 10-8. You mentioned Tennessee. They're 17-1 now, Bubba. I think that's the best start in the SEC since the 1951 Volunteers started with a 17-1 record. So you're talking about, this is the best that we've seen in the SEC in 70-plus years. It kind of really underscores just how impressive this is. They're 38-3 overall, and they've got a 5-game lead in the SEC. And I'm starting to think that, you know, unless something happens to slow them down, you mentioned they play Auburn. I think they've still got Georgia that they've got to play. They've got to go to Mississippi State. That's always a tough environment. But unless something slows them down, you know, a roadblock comes up in the next week or so, it's not hard-fetched to believe that they may wrap up the SEC title maybe with 1 or 2 weeks left in the season.
They could. I think a lot will be said about this. We'll see what happens. Auburn coming to town for them, because they go to Kentucky the following week. I think they'll boat race Kentucky, but then they have Georgia and Mississippi State. And I think you and I talked about it last week. If it comes down to the end of the season, Mississippi State's fighting for their life, I think that team's going to show up. I think they've still got talent on that team, and so I think they'll show up and do well. But yeah, I think Tennessee's sitting in a pretty good spot right now. But just remember, cream rises to the top. The Hogs are just we're just lingering away right there in first place in the West. We haven't peaked yet, so we're gonna be in good shape, Matt.
Tennessee swept Florida in Gainesville last week. That was one of three sweeps over the weekend. Mentioned Auburn over South Carolina and LSU over Missouri. Other results from last week: Vanderbilt took 2 of 3 at Kentucky. Kind of surprising to see Kentucky beat Vanderbilt in one of those games. Vanderbilt no-hit the Wildcats in game one. Kentucky won game two, and then it was a hard-fought game three win for the Commodores. Georgia won 2 of 3 over Alabama. Mississippi State won 2 of 3 over Ole Miss, and those games count toward the conference standings, Bubba. But then in the midweek on Tuesday night, Ole Miss beat Mississippi State in Pearl 5-2. So they split their season series, but in the SEC standings, Mississippi State's got the upper hand.
Well, I feel for Mississippi State having to play Ole Miss, what, 4 times in 5 days? That's got to be frustrating, having to watch some of the crap they do. It's bad enough 3 games, but you got to throw in an extra game to boot. That's got to be tough on Mississippi State. So, yeah, but I was happy to see Mississippi State take 2 out of 3 from them.
Mentioned that New Orleans beat LSU on Tuesday night 9-4. One other notable midweek score: Missouri State beat Missouri 3-2. Missouri State comes to Fayetteville next week. Bubba, do you know when the last time the Razorbacks played Missouri State?
Was it the Super Regional?
Well, no, they schedule a game in the regular season every year, but I believe the last time they played, I need to double check this, but I think the last time they played was 2018. Between some rainouts, COVID, and I guess there was also a COVID issue last year in 2021. I think it's been 4 years since Arkansas has played Missouri State. It's kind of thrown a little bit of cold water on what had been a really good regional rivalry. This week's series: Kentucky is at Florida, Alabama's at South Carolina, Auburn is at Tennessee, like Bubba mentioned, Mississippi State's at Missouri, A&M goes to Vanderbilt. That'll be a really interesting series to watch. And Georgia goes to LSU. SEC teams in the coaches poll this week: Tennessee remains number 1. Arkansas is number 4. Georgia number 11. LSU number 20. Auburn is 21. And Vanderbilt is 22. A little bit surprised to see Texas A&M not ranked this week. In their last 7 games, they are 5-2, all against top 25 teams. The SEC Report is brought to you by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, the best burger in 2 towns. Visit the original at 2803 North Arkansas Avenue in Russellville, or the newest location at 3484 West Weddington Drive in Fayetteville, just minutes from Baumwalker Stadium. Skip the line and order online or download the app in your app store, CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers. When all you do are burgers, they have to be the best. And Bubba, we mentioned this, Texas A&M looks like a really good team to me. You look at the teams they beat, they went to Georgia, won 2 out of 3. They beat Dallas Baptist real bad in the midweek last week, and then they win 2 of 3 against Arkansas. And I've been really impressed with how they played in the series finales the last few weeks. They played a rubber game against Kentucky, won it 17-3. They played a rubber game against Georgia, won it 23-9. And then a rubber game against the Razorbacks, like we saw last Sunday. They were up by quite a bit before Arkansas made that big comeback in the 8th inning. This is a team that, you know, I kind of look at little things like that. And, you know, I start to think that if A&M were to make a super regional, they might be a really hard team, you know, for whoever the home team is, if they have to come in and play the Aggies.
I think so. If you look at their SEC games only, they're hitting 289 as a team in SEC. That's pretty impressive. And they just have good at bats. They don't swing at a lot of bad pitches. I liked watching their hitters this weekend, just kind of their approach at the plate. They'll go the other way if that's what they get. If they get a pitch in, they'll pull it. But they do a really good job with two strikes, kind of staying on the ball. So they're not an easy lineup to maneuver. And, you know, pitching, they're not bad. I mean, they don't have – I don't think they have those some big dominant arms that they've had in the past, but they got guys that don't over the plate and get outs. And so that's really all you're looking for. And I'm surprised they're not ranked. I don't know how they ended up not getting ranked. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I agree. I think they're coming on right now, and they're getting hot at the right time.
Well, and you always know that Jim Schlossnagel's teams are going to play well in the postseason. That was always a constant when he was at TCU. And then, you know, I like the addition that they brought in with Nate Yeske. He used to be the pitching coach at Oregon State, had previously been at Arizona. That's one of the real big pitching names. This is a veteran coaching staff that I think knows what they're doing in the postseason. And like I said, I would not want to see Texas A&M in my bracket. So I want to talk about this, Bubba. Let's go in depth a little bit on situational hitting. We hinted at it earlier. 3 of the last 4 games, Arkansas has had an instance where they had a base runner at third base. In fact, in both instances, they had runners at second and third. In the 7th inning of the opener at Texas A&M, they have second and third, one out, and Zach Gregory and Peyton Stovall both go down chasing off-speed pitches, kills that rally. In the 8th inning, like we mentioned, on Sunday against Texas A&M, they've got second and third, the top of the order at the plate, Braden Webb, Brady Slavens, and Caden Wallace, they all strike out. And then Tuesday night against UCA, they've got a runner at third in the runners at second and third in the 7th inning. It's a tied 1-1 game. Dylan Leach at the plate pops up to third base. Robert Moore grounds out at second to end it. Dave Van Horn, you can hear the frustration in his voice when he's talking about the inability to get those runs home, especially in these tight games. As a hitter, what are you taught to do in those moments? And what are you seeing from the Razorbacks that's making it to where they're not able to get the job done?
I tell you, Matt, first of all, when you've got to have a plan and approach when you get in that situation, and the body responds to the mind. So as a hitter, when I step up to the plate in that situation, first of all, you know, as a hitter, okay, what's not going to score the run? Let me see. If I'm a left-handed batter, if I hook one to first, he ain't going to score. If I pop up, he ain't going to score. If I strike out, he ain't going to score. Then you say, okay, infield's back, ground ball up the middle. You want to know, tell your body what you want it to do. The body responds to the mind. So just tell it what you want it to do, and it'll do it. If you go up there and you don't have a plan in place, it's called the gray area. You know, well, you know, I'm kind of looking to drive the ball the other way if he gets an off-speed pitch. You know, it's just you get caught in between, and you're late on the fastball and you're early on the off-speed pitch. You end up swinging at pitches you shouldn't swing at and popping up or striking out. Best advice I ever got was look at the center fielder. Me as a left-handed hitter, and it's kind of hard to explain this on a podcast. I'll do the best I can. I'll keep it quick. Look at the center fielder for me as a left-handed hitter. I'm going to aim just to my left of the center fielder. And that's going to keep me on the ball. So if I get a fastball, even if I get beat, I'm going to pull my hands inside and get enough of it to get it out there for a sack fly. If I get an off-speed pitch, instead of rolling over it, since I've got that approach, I can stay through the ball, elevate it to the right side instead of rolling over into the first baseman. I get it out into the outfield. And then while doing that, I'm trying to flatten out my attack on anything on the outer part of the plate. I'm flattening out my attack. Just that prevents me from popping it up. But most importantly, once I got that advice, it was the best hitting coach I ever had, gave me that advice, Bill Robinson. Once I started doing that, I had a definite plan in place. I call it hitting to a destination, not worrying about a pitch location. I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm hitting the ball where I want to hit the ball. And the pitcher's just out there. I'm not worried about him. I know what I've got to do. And therefore you do it. My success rate went up 10 times, you know, by being able to do that approach. And then ultimately though, you got to want to be the guy. You got to want to be the guy at the plate. Hitting is mental. So if you go up there with the right mindset of, hey, I want to be here, I got this, and then you have that simple approach, it's really not that – I say it's not that hard. It is hard. You get late in an SEC game, Matt, and you're seeing good pitching. Or, you know, even early in a game, runners – you know, things change when runners get on base. I think the piece to the puzzle is the scouting report versus what your eyes tell you. We know what guys are going to do. Runners at second and third, this guy's going to throw 80% sliders, or this guy's going to go, you know, 80% off speed away. We know what these guys are going to do. They have tendencies, but a lot of times you get away from that scouting report because they know, it sounds stupid, they know what we know. And so they're trying to pitch away from their scouting report. And so a lot of times that's why it goes back to just the simple approach. If you'll go up there with that approach, then it doesn't really matter as much what that pitcher's doing, because you know what you're going to do at the plate and you know what your job is. The end result is you get that runner in.
On the flip side of that mental angle, does it become mental when, say, on Sunday and you've got that situation in the eighth inning? Are you still thinking back to, even if you weren't the guy at the plate, our team couldn't get it done two nights ago, or last night against UCA, that we couldn't get it done against College Station? Does that kind of grow, and does that become part of the equation?
Absolutely. It turns into a mental thing where you're trying not to fail because your teammate didn't get it done yesterday. You don't want to fail right now. You want to come through, and you can't, the body can't process a negative thought. So if you're trying not to fail, you're going to fail. You got to go up there with a plan and approach and of what you want to do. But absolutely, you know, it goes back to the hitting's contagious, so's not hitting. You know, runners in scoring position. A lot of people say there's no such thing as a clutch hitter. I think that's BS. There's guys that are really good in that situation of slowing the game down, going up there and getting it done. Other guys get up there in that situation and everything speeds up on them. You know, and you just got to be able to slow the game down and stay with your plan and your approach, and it'll happen, but you got to trust it.
I do want to touch on one thing. I've heard people say that Arkansas got off the hook against UCA by not having to put the ball in play, that, you know, Robert Moore was able to come home from third. But I think when they do that, Bubba, they overlook the fact that, number one, Dylan Leach was called out on a pretty questionable call at first base. And because the game wasn't televised, there was no replay available. Had there been replay available, it's very, you know, very possible that Arkansas could have had a leadoff runner and then Robert Moore follows with a single, and who knows how that game finishes out. But during that inning, you had Moore singled, Wallace walked, you had Michael Turner put the ball in play that moved Moore to third base with two outs, and then Brady Slavens had a good at bat in order to, you know, put the pressure on the pitcher, you know, to make that pitch on a 3-2 pitch. I think that sometimes people will look at it and say, just because there wasn't an RBI hit, that there weren't good at bats leading up to it. But I think that a lot of quality at bats are what led up to Arkansas winning that game in the 10th inning last night.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And you look at Brady Slavens at bat, you know, if he doesn't work the count right there, they never have a chance to throw a pass ball right there for Robert Moore to score. And so I think that's people that don't really understand the game of baseball say that. If you understand the game of baseball, you realize there were some really good at bats put together in order to get Robert Moore to third, in order for him to score on a pass ball. And, you know, if Brady could have easily gone up there, rolled over the first pitch or popped it up, inning over. Instead, he worked the count to a full count, ended up walk on a ball in the dirt. Robert Moore scores, and there we go. We have a win. So, yeah, I don't like whoever's take. Whoever says stuff like that, I don't like those takes because they really don't understand the game of baseball and what it's all about.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Grease Pig, this is Mike.
Coming in hot, so I can just stay in my vehicle during my oil change?
That's right. The Grease Pig wants to help keep you safe, so now you can stay in your vehicle during your oil change.
These guys are working like a pit crew.
That's part of our 17-point inspection, where we check your belts and hoses, we check and fill all your fluids, and offer full repair on all vehicles. And of course, we use Castrol products.
Why do I smoke coffee?
You know our waiting room is still open.
And give up front row seats to my own oil change? No, thank you. You're doing awesome. Mike, I think I'm making them uncomfortable.
Get into the Grease Pig, your local automotive specialist for over 20 years.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Let's take a look at the week ahead, presented by Grease Pig.
Arkansas will play Ole Miss three times this weekend at Baum Walker Stadium. Game number one is Friday night at 6:30. It will be streamed by SEC Network Plus. Game number two, Saturday at 7 p.m. That one will be televised by ESPN2. And then on Sunday, this is a different game time than was originally announced. The Razorbacks and the Rebels will play at noon, and that game will be televised on ESPN. It's the only SEC game that's being televised on ESPN during the regular season. Of course, Arkansas and Ole Miss, they have all kinds of history between them. The Razorbacks have won the last two series between the teams. They won two of three last year in Oxford. And then in 2019, they won the Super Regional in Ole Miss's last trip to Baum Walker Stadium. Ole Miss came to Fayetteville earlier in 2019 and won two of three against the Razorbacks in that series. It's a great series, really one of the best rivalries that the Razorbacks have on their schedule every year. Ole Miss comes into the series, Bubba, 23-17 overall. They're 6-12 in SEC play, and it's really hard to believe that this was a team that was ranked number one in the country at one point earlier this year in the coaches poll.
Isn't it crazy how things happen? But I'll tell you where they've struggled is, well, I'll tell you what, they've really struggled across the board, I guess, to be honest with you. But they struggled with starting pitching for a long time. They just couldn't find starting pitching. They've still been rotating guys in and out. There's been a whole lot of TBAs when it comes to this team. But if you look at them from a hitting standpoint, everyone talked about how strong their offense was. They got all these guys coming back. You know, they're going to score all these runs. They actually compared Arkansas's offense to Ole Miss's, you know, in the sense that they're real veteran, a bunch of power. But if you look right now in the SEC play, they've got one hitter hitting over 300. That's Tim Elko hitting 366 in SEC games. They're just not really getting it done at the plate. They're striking a lot. Their own base percentage as a team in the SEC is only 317. So they're just not getting on base. Pitching wise, you know, they've got a few guys that are going out there and giving them a few innings. They got a really good start from Dylan DeLucia Friday night at Mississippi State, and they got the win. He went a complete game, nine innings, five hits, two runs. Put together a really good start. But, man, they just haven't had a lot of good starting pitching, and they just haven't had solid hitting up and down the lineup. Now, with that being said, when they come to town, it's always a fight between us and Ole Miss. I mean, they know that right now that they're at the bottom of the pit, and they got to start winning games, so their season's going to be pretty short.
The Week Ahead is brought to you by The Grease Pig. For 20 years, they have specialized in serving UA students, faculty, and staff with two locations in Fayetteville on College Avenue and MLK Boulevard. The Grease Pig has experience for all your repair needs and, of course, complete service oil changes staffed with ASC-certified master technicians. They also provide tire and alignment services at their location on College Avenue. The Grease Pig, it's all about taking care of you and a proud supporter of the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. Bubba, you don't like Ole Miss. You don't like their annex. And so I'm just going to give you an open mic right here to tell us how you really feel about the Rebels.
Well, you'd probably have to mute me or beat me out a few times to really tell you how I feel, Matt, but I'll keep it clean for you. Hey, here's the thing. The thing about Ole Miss that's really frustrating is there's a certain way to play the game of baseball. There's a certain amount of respect, and you want to respect the game, respect your opponent, and they don't do it. It's just Bush League baseball. Dave Van Horn talks about it, and people call him a fuddy-duddy for not doing all the stupid antics that some of these other teams do. But look, that's respecting the game of baseball and playing it the right way. Ole Miss can be down 15-1 and they'll hit a home run and they'll pimp it like they just won the World Series. It's little things like that just, and I'm not saying don't play with energy and passion and have fun. I mean, baseball's fun. Go out there and play with energy, hit a home run, celebrate, run around the bases, but you can do it without showing up the other team, without disrespecting the game of baseball. And I think that's where I get frustrated is when I watch some of that stuff. It's all about me. It's not about the team. For Ole Miss, when I watch a player, it's about that player. It's about me. It's nothing team oriented. That's why at the end of the season, Ole Miss generally sits at home and we go to Omaha is because we play as a team. We're out there. We're playing for the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back of the jersey. And, you know, it's just a brand of baseball. I love Razorback baseball and I hate Ole Miss baseball and good baseball beats bad baseball.
I told you what the acronym Omaha is for, right?
Yes, you did. But go ahead and tell me again. I want everyone else to hear it.
And this is not me that has made this up. This is something I actually heard in Oxford the first time that I covered a series down there. Omaha stands for Ole Miss at home again.
I love it. I love that. I've got that written down in several places just in case I forget it. But no, that's awesome. But, you know, it's so true. And look, baseball takes a lot of energy and it's a mental game. And you spend all that energy on all that, you know, Bush League stuff at the end of the inning or at the end of a big play, you're taking away from energy on the field and focus on what you should be doing on the field. I don't know. I just don't like it. And I mean, what do you think about Ole Miss? I mean, you've been around, yeah. You've been around a long time. Do you notice those things?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I don't like it. I mean, I'm kind of with you. And, you know, and I think a lot of it is that I think that people who have grown up watching Arkansas for however long they've grown up watching them, you know, it could be someone like Bobby Smittel, who's been watching them for 35, 40 years, or someone who's just come along in the last 5 years, because Dave's program mirrors so closely what your coach, Norm DeBrien, did. You know, I think that people have become so accustomed to watching a certain brand of baseball that just the brashness of Ole Miss, you know, really stands out. And I would say, you know, the same thing for what's happening at Tennessee right now, which, you know, we've mentioned a few times on here, just, you know, really surprises me that Tony Vitello, a coach who's come out of the Tim Jamison and Jim Schlossnagel and Dave Van Horn tree, would have a program that has those types of annex. But yeah, I think I don't know how you can't notice that during these games.
Right. And I think, you know, you look at what Norm DeBrien, he used to tell us, hey, look, act like you've been there before, act like you've done it before. That's what you're supposed to do. You know, and there were times though that where if another team was getting out of line, he would turn us loose a little bit. I think Dave said the same thing about his teams. You know, every once in a while he'll turn you loose, but he just, you know, he doesn't like Bush League baseball, and it has nothing to do with being, you know, fuddy duddy. No, there's no fun. There's fun in winning, and Razorback baseball wins, and that's a lot of fun. And when you're having fun when you win and you play the game the right way. And so I love what Dave Van Horn said, you know, early in the season. I love the way he runs the program. I love the way the Razorbacks play the game of baseball. It's just two completely different styles of baseball, and like I said just a second ago, ours wins. And so I love Dave Van Horn for that and sticking up for what he believes in and playing the game the right way.
Interesting dynamic this week in Arkansas, 24-3 at home. The Razorbacks have been so good, especially in conference play at Baumwalker Stadium. Their only SEC loss at home was in that finale in 12 innings to Mississippi State. Ole Miss, you know, their struggles, Bubba, have been in Oxford. You look at their road schedule this year. In their last road series, they lost 2 of 3 at South Carolina. But before that, they won 2 of 3 at Kentucky. They won 2 of 3 at Auburn early in the season. They won 2 of 3 at a decent UCF team. They've actually played pretty well on the road this season. And so that's an interesting dynamic this weekend.
That is, but there's nothing like Baumwalker, Matt. So we'll see what happens when they roll into town and they got to step out on the field at Baumwalker. Things seem to change. So I tell you, I'm looking forward to this weekend. I like our chances here. I expect big things from Hagan Smith. And I think Jackson Wiggins is going to have a good start. I think we're going to light up the scoreboard. I don't think they have their pitching staff. They don't have the guys on there that really scare us. I think we're going to score a lot of runs. If you look at their earned run average in the SEC, it's 6.46 earned run average in the SEC. They're ranked 11th right now. And so I think we're going to score some runs. I think we're going to have a packed house. I think everyone's going to show up. The weather looks like it's going to be good. And so, boy, it's going to be a fun weekend.
Yeah, you know, the LSU series a couple of weeks ago, you thought you would have big crowds there for that, but you know, the weather wasn't great for that series. And so I think that probably kept some people away. There is a slight chance of storms on Friday night as we're looking at this a couple of days out. But it seems like those storms are going to be later than when they would play. Saturday night looks good. Sunday looks good. A nice, sunny, warm day in Fayetteville. And so you would hope that you start to see those big crowds. We haven't seen those big crowds a whole lot like I thought we would, given the quality of the competition that was coming in this year, or at least the brand name.
Yeah, but think about it, though. The wind's been blowing 20 miles an hour out of the south. No one wants to sit out there with the wind blowing like that. It's just been bad weather. I think this weekend we're going to pack them in, though. So if anyone's out there listening, Razorback fans, let's pack that place out and support our Razorbacks, and then we'll let's just beat down on Ole Miss.
But we talked last week about, you know, we've seen some things with Arkansas in midweek games, and they've been able to translate into the weekend pretty well. We talked about, you know, even going back to Braden Webb against Grambling State, and then, you know, he went on a nice streak there as the team's hottest hitter. Zach Morris pitched well in some midweek games and pitched well during the weekend. I wonder if you think Will McIntyre might see some action on Sunday. He threw 84 pitches during the game against UCA the other night, but his outings have been really, really good. Granted, not SEC level competition, but his outings have been good. And I wonder if you think maybe we'll see him get into the bullpen action this weekend.
I don't think we'll see Will McIntyre this weekend, but I think with the number of pitches he threw last night in Little Rock, I think they're probably going to save him against Missouri State for Tuesday. But then after that, there's no telling. I think he's pitched well enough to earn some weekend time. And so I think as we get later on and we're not playing the midweek games, I think you're going to see him some more on the weekends. I think he's earned it.
May even be a fourth starter, I guess, if they get to the SEC tournament and they need a fourth starter, or in an NCAA regional, that's always an important role on a team. So there's 4 weeks left in the regular season, Bubba. What are the areas that you think you want to see the most improvement from Arkansas over these final 4 weeks before they get to Hoover?
I think it's just consistency in the lineup. I'm not, like I said, I'm not real worried about Jackson Wiggins. I think our starting pitching, for the most part, I like our three guys we have in there. Our bullpen stepped up. I really like some of the guys that have stepped up. There's been awesome. Zach Morris stepping up has been awesome. Brady Tiger, Vermilion, Amage. You know, you mentioned Heston Toll. I really like the pitching side of it. I think it's a matter of just scoring more runs. I really do. This lineup still hasn't started clicking. But I think as the weather continues to warm up, I really think we're going to get it going. So for me, that's the one thing that I'm really waiting on, is to see this lineup click from top to bottom. We've seen spurts of it where part of the lineup will go, you know, but we haven't seen that whole lineup really come together yet. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
We'll see if it can happen this weekend against Ole Miss, the Razorbacks and Rebels three times at Baumwalker Stadium. Hope you'll come to WholeHogSports.com during the weekend to check out all of our coverage from the series. You can also listen to Bubba on the radio with Phil Elson on the Razorback Sports Network. Their broadcasts begin 30 minutes before each game. We'll see you next week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Have a great weekend, everyone.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at wholehogsports.com for the latest news and commentary.